Welcome to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast with me, Sherry Honeycutt, Life Coach, where I have one mission with this podcast, and that is to help you get out of your velvet rut, to stop living by default and waiting to have the life you crave. This is a podcast where I help you take inspired action, step into the responsibility for your own happiness, and start every day figuring out what you can do to create the life you want, because it won't accidentally happen, my friends. So lean into today's content, make the intention to take away a nugget or two, and more importantly, decide that you're going to implement whatever you take away from here today, because it's on you, baby. It's on you to create that life that you want, and I know you can do it. So let's go. Hey there, have I got a treat for you? I'm super excited that the next few episodes of the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast are a series of conversations that I had with amazing people several years back. In fact, most of them were recorded in the throes of the pandemic. But don't worry, they are full of gems of wisdom that really are evergreen, and I can't wait for you to hear them. So join me on a trip down memory lane over the next few episodes of my podcast, where you will benefit from these never-before-heard, too-good-to-miss recordings that I've had stashed away. And trust me, they're packed with juicy insights that I hope you will enjoy as much as we enjoyed recording them. And remember, it's never too late to start designing your life on purpose. Hello, and welcome to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast. Of course, you've probably already heard that in the pre-recording, but welcome again. I get so excited and even a bit nervous sometimes when I'm getting ready to have a phenomenal conversation. We won't analyze the nervousness part, but let's go into the excitement part. My guest today is Betsy Crouch, and you are going to be, I'm already giggling, I'm already laughing about what is about to happen, because I don't know, but I'm so excited. You guys, we're looking at each other on the computer screen and we're already kind of laughing. It's very fun. Betsy, how are you? And welcome.
Thank you for having me, Sherry. I'm just honored to be here and thrilled for our connection and conversation. Every time we get a chance to connect and chat, it's just the upward spiral. So I'm thrilled.
Upward spiral. Yeah, it's fun. So let me give you a thumbnail of Betsy, and then I'm going to mostly let you discover her yourself, and then I'll have things in the show notes. But Betsy's a leader, and I say that capital L leader. She comes in with groups and teams and helps them get really centered around their values, about what's important with them. She is one of those synthesizers. These are my words, not hers. So the synthesizer, she's a master facilitator. You should read some of her testimonials. She brings to this, you guys, executive coaching, her understanding of psychology and Help me, Betsy.
Improvisational
theater.
Improvisational theater. There it goes.
Of which you can see I should never do. Entrepreneurship, positive psychology, appreciative inquiry, the list goes on. She's put all this in a package, and it is the package of Betsy that is such a phenomenal, phenomenal leader. And you're going to sense that. But of course, I'm having her here not only as a leader, but as also just the human that she is to talk about life. So how's that for an introduction?
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Absolutely. I love talking about life. I'm fascinated by life and the human experience. So
yes,
absolutely.
That is one of the many reasons, Betsy, I've asked you to be on this podcast, because here and the listeners who follow on this podcast are folks who are interested in not living by default. And what I mean, and not necessarily accepting the factory settings that they came into the world with or were told they had, but instead go, wait a minute, what do I really want? And hey, where can I garner the stuff, the tools, the energy, the motivation to create that? Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Oh my gosh. Well, you and I are totally in alignment. Mm-hmm. Because anytime I get the opportunity to enter into conversation with people or even examining my own life, I'm asking those same questions. I'm questioning, mm-hmm. what is this default? What is the expectation? You know, people often come to me and they say, oh, I have this problem. I need help solving it. And so what we always do is we start taking steps backwards. And I know you do this with people too, is we start going back, because we need to, like Einstein said, if you have an hour to solve a problem, take 55 minutes to define what the problem is and then 5 minutes to solve it. So it's that questioning of like, wait a second, what is the actual goal here? Do we want to follow this path that's been well grooved before us, or do we really want to connect with ourselves holistically and what makes this come alive? So I am here for it. That conversation. All right, I mean, how much time do we have?
Well, and it's my contention, and I don't really know that this is true, but I feel like it is, that the majority of people have not yet had the opportunity, been reminded, found the courage, whatever, to ask those questions. That if you're a person who is contemplating your own direction and your own way you're living your life, you are already in the minority. And what I mean by that, I guess, is a weird way of giving kudos to anybody who's stopping and doing that kind of assessment that you just mentioned. Companies who are willing to say, hey, we might not be on the right path.
Yeah.
Or individuals. So it begins with, or it doesn't begin with necessarily, but the questions. Talk to me about how you approach questioning yourself, your clients, whatever. Go with it.
All right.
How do you use the question?
I want to start with, you mentioned, you know, people in our lives being in a situation where we don't even realize that we can question, or we're not even to that point where we have the awareness or the exposure. We haven't had a conversation with somebody to ask us that curveball question to make our head spin, to say, wait a second, what? Up isn't up and down isn't down. And so I think that for me, you know, when we live in that place before somebody asks a question and helps us to get out of a certain pattern of thinking, often we feel there's something wrong with us. I mean, we think there's something wrong with us, that we can't fit into this default programming, or that we can't do things the way we think other people are doing them, or succeed in the way that they succeed, or look the way they look, act the way they act, have the kind of results, right? We could go through all these different ways we compare to other people. And I can say that in my life, that was me for the first 23 years of my life, was feeling like there's something wrong with me. I don't quite get how to do life like it seems like other people. It seems to come more easily to other people. That's what I felt I experienced as a child. A lot of anxiety, a lot of, I mean, seasons of depression. I mean, we could go into the different challenges, right, that come from living in a place of feeling this sense of invalidation, of feeling like I can't quite do what it seems like everyone else is doing. Or if I am doing it, I've completely lost myself. And that's where I ended up at 23, was I was a shell of myself, where I had played the character, I had played the role, I had done what everyone said was the way to succeed. And even by that age, and I was in sales, I had a new BMW and I bought a condo and I'd done the things that were material things that seemed like success. But I was totally unhappy, a shadow of myself, and could see that I was going down a path of self-destruction. And what helped me get out of that, and I want to come back to what you said about questions, is that I was invited to go to a personal growth and development workshop with a woman whose name is Faith Spina, who became my first coach and helped to ask many of the questions and help me start to see things differently and even get my own information about what was appropriate for me. And the first card that I picked, it was a Louise Hay card in that workshop. It was loving others is easy when I love and accept myself. And we were each supposed to read the card and then say what it meant to us. And when it got to me, my heart was beating faster as it's going around. And all I couldn't hear what anybody else was saying, because everybody knows that feeling. You're like, it's all, what am I going to say? And how am I going to? So it gets to me, I just burst into tears.
Oh.
And that has
something
been.
Something broke open.
Oh, yeah. And that has been my path since then, which is coming into self-acceptance and giving myself compassion, understanding, and curiosity and patience. And so when we start talking about questions, I like to start thinking about questions in terms of like, what is the most gentle thing that we can do for and with ourselves right now? What is, how might we show ourselves a tiny bit of compassion if we can't feel like we can show ourselves a lot of compassion when we're in those moments? Because it's really hard to go from that place to do like this 180. Oh, now I have a whole different worldview, and I'm going to ask myself, and I'm going to connect with my higher self and all these things. That's not where I was. It was like, can we just get a crack in the door to like, what is, and with my clients, so a question might be like, what is something gentle you can do for yourself this week? How might you show yourself some compassion?
Yeah,
and it might be tiny. Just be tiny. But it's like getting that crack of that door open. Some people might think, oh, the questions are going to start and they're going to be really big. It's like, no, it's just it's just that tiny step to start to see a new way of being.
Gosh, so many things I wanted to say about what you just shared, but I'm going to start the the last thing you said right there is, I'm so glad you made that distinction that you don't necessarily have to come in with these big swooping. It's like, you don't have to come in and paint the walls all these grand colors. You can just like, you know, clean one wall and paint it a nice, lovely new shade of whatever to create a new movement in your life. Yeah. Right. And so just cracking that open at whatever level you're ready or your clients are ready, or, you know, it's like, we can only go as fast as the slowest part of us wants to go. And so
let's put that quotable up, Sherry. I know we got to put that quotable up. I love that.
I will.
As fast as the slowest part of us wants to go. Bless you. Because that is so true.
I didn't write that. That is a lyric of a song written by a spiritual artist named Karen Drucker. And it was a song I used to listen to years ago about, you can only go as slow as this. You can only go as fast as the slowest part of you wants to go. But here's the part, you're going. And so what I also want to go back for the listeners and even for myself, for you, I love that you were telling me that you were not in integrity. And I mean, integrity, meaning it wasn't in alignment with who you really were, but you were playing a role. You were doing the things, and to the external world, you looked like you had it all together. Right. But can you go back a little bit and tell us, you were starting to understand that you were out of sync, right? And so, and you accepted yes to this workshopping. What really was the turning point for you? Was it happy accidents? Was it serendipity? Was it anything conscious? That was the pain of that out of integrity?
Large? You know, and that's I would put it the same way, that I was out of integrity with myself and with out of alignment with myself. You know, going to that workshop cracked things open for me. And it's, and what it allowed is just a little bit of love to come in.
Yeah.
A little bit of acceptance, a little bit of people seeing me, and particularly that coach who's a dear friend of mine, Faith, seeing me and not letting me fool her like I felt like I could fool everyone else with all my humor and my flashy moves that I can do. I've tricked a lot of therapists. I can talk my way through a therapy session like you wouldn't believe. I can talk 49 minutes and get myself right on out of there.
Betsy, I've said the same thing to my Claire. So I'm like, you know, I'm really good. You're gonna have to be at the top of your game if you're gonna get me to budge at all. Your work's cut out for you.
Right. So she had me really dialed in the most gentle and loving way. And so I started to let that love start to come in. But what I experienced after that over the next year was a series of physical, emotional, and spiritual breakdowns. So like, I blew my knee out playing soccer, but this was also after a night of partying and I slept 5 hours. And you know, the whole kind of laddering of these things. I lost my voice. I was training people 50 hours a week. I lost my voice. I had nodules on my vocal cords. They suggested surgery, but I could recover because of the knee surgery. I mean, there were so many things. I was in speech therapy. I was seeing a voice pathologist, a knee therapy. I went from having, you know, all this money in my bank accounts to like starting to go into debt, like in 6 to 7 months kind of thing. My business was running in the negative. Like everything's just started to unravel.
Yeah.
So it was the kind of like that crack opened up, but then I could really start to feel into the pain that I was experiencing in my outside world started to reflect that. And then the moment within all of this was when a former sales rep of mine came into my office to meet with me, and he had started a new sales job. And I thought, oh, good for me. I will encourage him in his new job. You know, come on in. I'll talk to you because I'm so great at encouraging people. He comes in, he starts selling me what his new product is, and he starts selling me a grave plot for me. And I'm listening to his pitch, and in the back of my mind, I'm saying, what? You know, I'm trying to keep it cool with this guy because I'm being very good at being encouraging.
Yes.
But I'm thinking, who the heck are you trying to sell a grave plot to? I am 23 years old. I'm not dying anytime soon. So inside I was angry. Mm-hmm. And he started saying, no, it's cheaper to buy it now than if you're, you know, later. And it was, he laughed, and I said, no, I'm not going to buy one. Thank you. But I encouraged him. I kept his business card. I still have his business card. But when he left, it just, as much of the self-destructive behavior that I had done and abusing alcohol and all the things I had done that I was right on this edge. Really on this edge of really hurting myself or other people. And that, having that moment, he basically said to me, hey, you're going to die one day for real.
Yeah.
And that had not occurred to me. And we know now the brain's not developed. I mean, 23, the brain is not developed. Yeah. You're taking these, you know, your inhibitions are low. You're not, there's a lot of parts of the brain that are not developed. But it hit me like, oh, okay, so I am actually going to die one day. There's going to be a grave plot or some kind of cremation or something's going to happen where this thing is going to end. And I have a choice. I can go on this path. And for somehow, either through my coach, Faith, who I ended up hiring to coach me one-on-one, whether it's, I think it was a question she asked me, which was, if you knew you're going to die in 6 weeks, would you live the way that you're living now? And when, but when he came in trying to sell me a grave plot, I could actually feel more of that question. And I said, no, I mean, I can't. And actually, if I go down this path, I won't live as long, or I won't be able to fully serve really any life, let alone purpose. So I could see the crossroads. And since that point in time, I have been able to see the crossroads more and more and more clearly. And I'm at the point now, which after I'm 43 now, so now 20 years of practice, I can see the crossroads, and I am sprinting down away from that path of self-destruction. Thank goodness. But it's taken a lot of practice.
Sure.
But that was one of the first moment, that was the first major moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to die one day. So this isn't working. I need to make some changes.
Right. I'm sitting over here, and I'm struck by your story, and at the same time I'm going, my gosh, we get these opportunities to see things, and I don't know that just special people get those signs. Do you know what I mean? But you saw these signs, and you really got them. They were also pretty obvious. I mean, he's selling grave plots. I mean, that's hilarious. Can we just talk about
right? I know
that's really kind of funny, only because in hindsight. But it, you know, you didn't have to manipulate that to make that mean something, you know, significant, and it did. But also, though, Betsy, you listened. I mean, we all know those folks who, from our perspective, we would look and go, how many more times do they have to get slammed before they actually see, you know, that this is, that life is precious or whatever we're wishing they see, but you saw it. And then this combination, it sounds like you were cracked open. This little bit of light and love came in. You had faith, and I'm sure there might've been others, but who saw you without the bullshit. They sort of just saw past your bravado or smoke and mirrors or whatever. And again, we're taught to have those smoke and mirrors, right? Just see the shiny object, you know.
For our survival at a certain point.
But then, so now let's say you've got, where you're at this place where you've been cracked open a bit. You've seen that I don't like the trajectory I'm on. I'm going to shift. And you've already admitted that doesn't happen overnight. Angels don't sing, and you don't just turn it over. But tell me a little bit about what happened next for you after that.
Well, over the next 2 years, I did a pretty intensive amount of coaching with my coach, mm-hmm. and a lot of reading and self-reflection and mm-hmm. reconnecting to my spirituality. I would say by the time that this all happened, I was definitely identified as an atheist. I didn't think any, mm-hmm. I had totally shut out any possibility of any spirituality. And mm-hmm. over 2 years doing just a lot of work with my coach and reflection, I was able to reconnect with my relationship to God and my own spirituality. Mm-hmm. And take some time. There was I'd say about a year and a half or 2 years after that I said, I'm gonna cut out. A friend of mine told me about this thing, 10 days, cut out meat, dairy, alcohol, sugar. So I said, I'll do it for 10 days. I did it for 10 days, never felt better in my whole life. So I said, mm-hmm. well, if I feel this good, I ought to keep going. And that year, the times that I have really sunk into following a very helpful path, I've been able to connect to my own information. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that information has come in very clearly. And that year, which was 2005, I did a surfing and yoga retreat in Costa Rica. And I'm sitting on this hammock and journaling and listening to music. And I feel like this lightning bolt of clarity came down through my crown. Mm-hmm. It, so clearly that I haven't had an experience like this since, that just said move to San Francisco. Now, I had been to San Francisco many times. My sister lived there. I had studied at mm-hmm. Berkeley for a semester, and I had recently been there, but it was like, boom. Oh. And so mm-hmm. At that point I had already moved from Michigan to New Jersey. So I had already changed my jobs, but I loved my current job. I loved my boss. I mean, he's like a brother mm-hmm. to me. I walk in that Monday and I said, I got to go to San Francisco. Like, it just yeah. felt so clear that I mm-hmm. knew it, I could not deny this. So I just started doing that. So that was the next chapter. I moved to San Francisco without a job or lived in my sister's basement for a couple of months and just took some time to connect with myself. And I think since then, it's just been kind of different seasons over the last 16 mm-hmm. years of like reconnecting with like, okay, wait, before I go and take a major action, I need to check in with myself. Yeah. And this goes back to what you said about living by default and asking the questions, which is, mm-hmm. yeah, I've just been able to practice. One of the things I feel most proud of about my life is that I have been able to continually come back, even when it seems unpopular or inadvisable based on what culture or business or people think, for me to say, no, I'm actually, like, a lot of this past 2 years after yeah. I shut down my previous business, I have been continuing to coach people and whatever, but I'm not like putting out a big thing. I'm reconnecting with myself, listening, and I'm not mm-hmm. just saying I need to go take action. It's just, I need to just yeah. allow things to move on their own.
You know, I remember that from our first conversation that we had as we were getting to know each other, you're talking about, you were clear about one thing needed to close. And I remember, I don't know if I actually spoke it to you, but just this calmness as you were like, you know, the next thing is just not really clear yet, but there was no sense, or at least not that I saw, of angst. There was a level of trust and mm-hmm. calm and equanimity around that. And what I'm hearing you is that you have developed over time this self, this sense of your own self, your healthy self, and that self guides you. You trust it. Mm-hmm. Is that an accurate reflection of what you just said?
Yeah, it is. Simpler? And I think that anyone hearing this, you know, what we get to skip over and saying, oh, these 20 years, right, is like all the times that I kind of fell off the path and yeah. came back, and I fell off yeah. and I came back. It's like a continual practice, or like,
exactly.
oh, I know that a canary in the coal mine is if I'm not flossing my teeth every day, something's gone off the rails. So like this past year, I noticed, I was like, I'm only flossing like 3 times a week. So it's like noticing those mm-hmm. patterns of saying, okay, well, what's really going on? And I also want to acknowledge that although part of my story involves substance abuse, and that's been a significant part of my journey in healing and learning about myself, addiction is a disease that many people struggle with. And I feel that somehow I have been able to live without a desire to use substances for the last probably 6 or 7 mm-hmm. years. And not everybody has that experience. And I don't know that I could explain, oh, I did this thing or I did that. And it's not that. It's like for anyone who's maybe going through that or has a family member, I'm lucky. It's a miracle. I honestly really do think so. And I think that if we say, oh, it's because I did ABC and so didn't do those things, and that's maybe how I got different results. I think that's, so I just want to mention that because that has come up. Because we need to give compassion and understanding to people. And I think there's a lot of invalidation that goes on around mental health. So
I agree.
So yeah. Agree. So what we haven't covered is all the mental health things I've gone through, the substance abuse, right? So, but is the practice of continually coming back. And I think that that window, that door that was open about love and acceptance, that that is the muscle that I've been able to cultivate and build for myself, but also with other people, and really put energy into building that muscle for love and compassion for myself and others. And so that that is what provides for me now resilience. To be able to hold as much, I feel like now I can hold more pain and more struggle than I, in the last couple of years, I feel like I'm able to hold that and not run from it. But I really also feel it's because I've been able to cultivate that love and compassion muscle.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. This morning I did a Facebook Live for my group on Facebook. And basically was saying to folks, you know, I've not been around for the last couple of weeks. I kind of got, to speak in flossing terms, I quit flossing. You know, it's like all of a sudden life threw me a couple of curveballs and I got off course just, you know, in from what I said I was going to do. But the whole point of the live was to say, but that's what happens. That's not abnormal. That's not a foul on my part necessarily. It's just that, and I use the phrase that we learned in a community that you and I are in together, at least the first time I heard it, plan tight, hang loose. And I'm kind of like, that's sort of how I want to run my life in a way. I want to plan it. I want to visualize it. I want to have this juicy vision of what it looks like. But then you kind of have to hang loose because you don't know. There might be a pandemic, let's say, or you might... You know, you might have these things that throw you off. And when that happens, you bring in the love and the acceptance all the time, but you double up on that self-compassion. And then you sit down, at least for me, and go, okay, let's come back to center. Let's come back to center and go back with those questions. What do I need right now?
Yeah.
What might be happening? What might this be? You know, that muscle. And you're right. I'm so glad you brought this up. It was going to be my next question. So then the byproduct, if you will, of doing that is you look back and you go, man, I've learned a lot about resilience, which is sort of a buzzword now. I don't know if you feel like it is a buzzword. I do, but it's a powerful concept. Talk to me about resilience. I want to hear your take on it.
You know, I'll tell you a funny, 2-3 years ago, I did a TEDx talk with a former collaborator of mine, and the subject was resilience. And part of that experience was blocking off a month of work, hiring a very expensive coach and guide, an amazing coach, actually spent a lot of money on that, a lot of preparation, a lot of hours, you know. And then we delivered this TEDx talk with the idea that it was going to be part of this, getting this message out about resilience. And I'll say more about resilience itself in this next part, because guess what happened? The audio failed on the recording and the video was also somewhat messed up. And it was literally a plug was loose. And after our talk and the next one, the production team realized it, fixed it. And then it was working after that. So after this event and the live audience, it's so great. Oh my God. The video was total fail. And this is why it's hilarious, because the whole talk was about resilience. And so this is, I have an idea for another TEDx talk.
Well, is it called another. The plug is loose?
Right.
Or jiggle the plug.
Yeah, the plug is loose. We all mess things up sometimes. Yeah. But that is part of the resilience. Part of that resilience message is about celebrating and acknowledging mistakes and failures and learning from those experiences. And I love what you shared about your Facebook Live this morning and really validating all the parts of our experience, because it is the whole. And so many people, you know, up until recently, people have been living, presenting this really facade of themselves of, this is the good parts of me, and I'm hiding all these parts that are maybe challenging or that I'm ashamed of. And we're moving into a time where people are really desiring to see the whole of us and share the whole story, because when we do that, we validate the whole person of each other. But the thing about resilience that I've been thinking a lot about is that a lot of people, what a lot of people call resilience, Sherry, and you know this too, is armoring up and just trying to blast through and deny all of the hard stuff in our life that's happening. And guess what? I am not on that train. And thank I am you. Here for talking about what I really believe resilience is. And I get a little fearful when people start talking about resilience that way. I'm like, I think I thought of myself as resilient at that time of the beginning of these stories, when I was in my little business suit and just on the inside, totally shattered and falling apart. Mm-hmm. I think I would have said, oh yeah, I'm resilient. Because I thought I'm wearing armor and I'm going to freaking run through that wall to show you that I'm capable. But I'm dying inside. So, and I hate myself.
That's not what we're talking about.
And I hate myself. And like, So the resilience that I connect with and that I really like to talk about, and there are some, you know, if we look into the research definition of resilience, it's really nothing like what people are using the word to mean out there in the world. But to me, it's about, resilience is about the ability to sit with all the hard stuff and then feel it and be with it and see it and be able to move through it to the other side. And once you're on the other side, maybe you're not feeling that energized or strong, but you're moving in that direction. You said this a little bit ago. It's like, you're still moving. You can only move as fast as the slowest part of you, right? To go back to the Karen Drucker quote that you shared. It's like, okay, maybe we're moving slow after that. And that's exactly where we need to be. If we look at nature, let's use nature as an example. I mean, okay, guess what? Time, speed, it's all an illusion. It's going to take whatever it's going to take. Exactly. And so, you know, if resilience to me is about wholeness, I don't care how fast I go, as long as all of me's there, it can take a while. That's okay. Because I need all of me to love you, to love people, to connect with my wife and family, to connect with anyone who I want to support and serve. So that's what resilience means.
Gosh, let's take that in. I'm hoping the listeners really take this in, this idea of wholeness. I think you're spot on that we have been taught, we have been encouraged to compartmentalize, to break ourselves apart, to only value certain pieces of us, to only put certain parts out there, to deny others. And then we're this, just, I see this spine where we're just this fragmented, crackety, pixeled kind of creatures. And we don't, that's not what heals the world. That's not how we live our best life. It's from that place of wholeness. I'm interested in your definition, that idea, that ability to sit in, not just your definition, but the definition of resilience, to sit with that hard stuff that I will tell you, I kind of came into a world with a little bit of a muscle for that. I've not been hard stuff averse. I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. And it kind of made me the odd person out, that I would sit and I'd be the one that would sit, you know, and talk about the hard stuff with folks. In part of my work, I've been an HIV counselor and have told hundreds of people that they have HIV and I sit with them and those hard things. And what I realized, first of all, that's a muscle and it's a sacred moment to be and witness someone in their pain or in their challenge and even show up in your own. And when we choose not to do those pieces, we're missing out on this glorious, delicious part of the human experience. Does that make sense? You're nodding your head.
Feeling it. I mean, we're missing out on connection.
Yeah. Because that's where the real connection is, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Because if I can't be with my own pain, and or if I was in my own pain and using that as a reason to sell myself on this idea that there's something wrong with me, I'm broken, I should be ashamed of how I am or who I am, then I'm, you know, my coach used to talk about it like a grapefruit. She said, living like that is like holding a grapefruit behind your back, but trying to talk to someone, hoping they don't see the grapefruit. And if you're doing that, then you're spending all your energy. And if we're talking right now and I'm holding a grapefruit behind me, I'm not fully present. I'm not listening. And I'm also thinking, does Sherry see the grapefruit? Because, you know, if she saw the grapefruit, if I sit like this, can she see the grapefruit? And I leave our, we meet all for coffee or whatever. And I'm like, I think she saw it. I think she saw my grapefruit. I'm not sure. Yeah. And if she saw it, she wouldn't love me. She wouldn't accept me. And so as I've been able to hold that myself, I feel blessed to be able to have these moments with other people where I can see and feel and be present with and not run from the pain or the truth or the experience, the grief, the loss. And I feel that's because I've been able to do it with myself instead of invalidating myself, say there's something wrong with me. It's like, and those moments are sacred. They're some of the most beautiful moments we could possibly have, because in our darkest moments, what do we need? We need each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I believe that that if we can't do that for ourselves, we can't do this really for others. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of a universal truth for me, is that I can't give to others what I can't give for myself, or they're at least in tandem, to the extent that I can love and accept myself is how much I can give to others. And that means sometimes accepting the truth, even if I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, you look at your bank account and go, that's the number of dollars in there. That you look at the scales, that's the number of pounds on there. That's the number of friends I've run off with my bad behavior. That's the number of, you know, whatever. And it begins by accepting that with love. And some of those darker moments are the ones that break us open.
Yeah,
I'm feeling I want to share a little story. I hope it doesn't run the flow of this, but I don't know if you know this, Betsy. I have a son. He has autism, and he is one of the most amazing young men. And as I've watched him, I feel like, and my friends and family, we believe that he is sort of this resilient dude. And I'll tell you because, and I think you've helped me understand why. He has this ability when something happens he doesn't like, he feels it, man. Oh. He's like, oh, that makes me so mad, or that's so delicious, or that's unfair. And he feels it, you know, and let's just go with something that's sort of a negative feeling. Oh, I didn't get to play football. And he's so mad. And then he feels it. And then he makes a decision. Well, I don't want to feel this way anymore. And then he literally asks himself, what do I want to feel now? And then he'll go do that. And so what's so amazing to me is that he doesn't do what those of us maybe who don't have autism is pretend, well, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I really didn't want that to begin with, or it's okay, or that's the way it was meant to be. And inside you're seething or brokenhearted or whatever and putting bullshit on it. He's like, no, whatever it is, he feels it and he's loud about it. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, but I don't like feeling this way. And then he goes, wow, how do I want to feel now? Yeah. And I mean, this is a kid who would get hit by a car. He got hit by a car, totaled the car. He got hit by a car and he's lost all, you know, he's laid up and he's like really sad and really hurt. But he's like, oh, but you know what? I get to be the one that decides what we watch on television. Because I'm sitting on, you know, and it was genuine. It's genuine. And I'm like, so as I've been sort of unpacking him and his amazing lessons to me in my life, I believe he is showing me resilience in encapsulated.
Yes.
You feel it.
Yes.
You see it. You acknowledge it. You feel it. And then you make a decision and you don't drop anchor in it. Yeah. And he, over and over.
What a teacher.
Oh, my God. The stories.
For all of us.
Stories.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yes, and there's no resistance to this is what's happening, right? It's like, this is what's happening. This is what I'm feeling. Connection with his body and those emotions running through. And
there's no part of him that's going to hide a grapefruit, man. If he's got a grapefruit, he's like, you're going to see that grapefruit. And then he moves on, man. Yeah. He moves on. Yeah. So I know that you've got the possibility of rescheduling a resilience talk or a new talk about that. And so I'm going to keep tabs on that and try to let the listeners know about that, because I can feel, Betsy, you have so much to say about that and feel.
Thank you.
Yeah. Gosh, I feel your wisdom. I don't, is that word seems inadequate. It's a great word, but I feel your wisdom. I feel your insight. And I'll tell you what else I get from you is your complete passion about being in integrity. Mm. That's how I see you.
Thank you. What I appreciate about you is your ability to see and your willingness to reflect back what you see. That's something that from our first conversations, I've always really appreciated. What a gift that is. That you give.
Well, that's,
and thank you for sharing it with me. I mean, and it feels true. I'm now more than even ever before, I can't, even if I wanted to, go down some path that doesn't feel like it's in alignment. I just can't. I can't. My foot won't go, like won't even step toward, you know. In the past I could like step into it, kind of play with it, like, well, maybe I could like do this work for this company. And it's like, no,
yeah,
no, I can't. Well, do it.
And that's such a beautiful thing you said, that I want folks to hear this, that when, if you're maybe over on this other side where life has just been on the factory settings, or you're just waking up to how miserable or unhappy you are, and you're listening to Betsy, or you've been listening to this podcast and other folks about, and they seem to have all their shit together. The reality is, we're skipping over the mess ups, and we're skipping over the amount of time and the amount, but it is something that builds over time, that that integrity, that knowing. You didn't just wake up one day and have it. Mm-mm. You learned, you taught yourself how to listen to it. It might have been there, but you started to listen and pay attention. Right. Mm-hmm. And now it's muscle memory. You're like, oh no, I can already feel. I don't even have to explore why I don't want to work for that company, because I just trust my gut.
Yeah, but, because, you know. And I think one way of describing it is like, I used to be in so much pain that, well, it's almost like let's use an example of drinking. I was in so much pain that I wanted to like, I felt like I needed to like drink or numb this pain. And even if that made me feel bad, that even felt good, because it almost seemed like a relief from the other emotional pain I was feeling. But like getting to the place where I feel good in my life, like part of my relationship to alcohol now is I will have a little bit of tequila. I love Casamigos Reposado tequila. Mm-hmm. I'll have this much. You can't see me because we're on video, but it's, my fingers are about a centimeter apart. I'll have a little bit. And if I start to feel it, that doesn't feel good to me. It doesn't feel good, because I feel better feeling clear than I do feeling intoxicated. So there's this like recalibration. I like the word calibration, and that's something that I think for me has happened in a lot of different ways over time. But I do want to say something to everybody listening who feels like they might be on these default settings, because I really truly believe, based on my experience and working coaching with thousands of people, and also I've done hundreds of clairvoyant readings of people and healings, is that our adaptability to our ability to adapt to our environment, to culture, to relationship expectation, there's so many layers of programming. I'll use programming as just a word, or even our schooling. We're so adaptable as human beings, and we've adapted to function to these, and I'll use your words, default settings, as a way of survival that served us at a certain point in time. So if we sometimes approach our life, we start to see that we're operating this way. We say, oh, why did I do this? And we invalidate it. We say, why can't I be more like so-and-so? Or why can't I feel motivated to do my meditation or to do the things that I know are good for me? And so I just want to start with validating that you've adapted this way brilliantly. This is a brilliant function of being a human in a world that so much of what around us is broken and diseased and not based in love. And so the reaction to that, to try to survive or to shore up, kind of armor up, is a brilliant adaptability strategy. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that we hold on to those strategies longer than we need them.
Yes.
So they served us to help us survive. So I adapted, you know, mm-hmm. to tell jokes and be entertaining and get attention. And when I was 7, 8 years old, but then, you know, once I got a little bit older, it's like, okay, maybe I need to listen more, you know, like mm-hmm. not just put on a show all the time. But is to say, okay, thank you for my ability to adapt to these default settings.
Exactly.
I appreciate it. And I'm curious, like, what might be ready to like maybe loosen up or to change? What might I be able to see differently?
Exactly.
Totally different approach, right? Than saying,
exactly,
F this, let's throw it all out, delete, how do I restart? How do I refresh this thing?
Right. Or to sit in judgment of why did I spend so many years doing that? Mm-hmm. Instead going, you know what? There were some really good reasons and that saved my ass or that made total sense back then.
Yep.
And so there's that love and acceptance of what was and then asking those loving questions going forward and really understanding that our defaults, and I love what you said, are given to us for reasons that others even think are good reasons. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So it's not something done to us. You know, culture has created these things and they don't always serve, but they're not our fault. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, and so we just want to do an inventory of where we are and then come back to a word you said really early on is choice. Mm-hmm. And you realized you had a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, something broke open at that retreat that you went to or that workshop that at least that was a word I remember hearing you say that you went, oh, I get to choose if I keep on this trajectory or I make the effort. And you might not even know in that minute, at the moment at 23, make the effort to shift things.
Yeah.
To shift things.
Well, I got a couple. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I wanted to add to the part to that story because it's just hit me. And that is, I shared at the beginning of that workshop, I had this Louise Hay card, which is loving myself is easy. Loving others is easy when I love and accept myself. That was the beginning of the workshop. Mm-hmm. The workshop ended at 5 o'clock on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I had, and this was with my colleagues at the time that I was working with 100 hours a week, you know, and I had a girlfriend for a year and then broke up and then had another girlfriend. But anyway, 2 years I had a girlfriend or been dating women and been totally closeted about it with people that I worked with all the time.
All the time.
I mean, talk about cultivating the ability. Yeah, I had a bag of grapefruit. I think grapefruits were everywhere. I thought if people knew this, I wouldn't be promoted. I thought they wouldn't love me. They would reject me, et cetera, et cetera. And I had told myself at this workshop, I'm going to come out to everybody. And after I pulled that first card, so this was loving others easy when I love and accept myself, because I was not accepting myself. I was feeling lots of shame and internalizing that. And at one of the breaks on the last day, I told one of my closest coworkers who I had been in her wedding. We were really good friends. I mean, I had kept this from everybody.
Really secret.
Yeah. Really, really, really secretive. And 15 minutes before the end of the workshop, Faith, who became my coach and now friend, she looked at me and said, I kid you not, she looks at me and says, Betsy, is there something that you want to share with us? I feel like there's something that you want to share with us. And I could see you. You're getting the chills. I'm getting the chills. She says, there's something you want to share. And I knew in that moment, I could feel it physiologically now. My heart's racing. I'm like, ugh. And I said, yeah.
Mm.
I think all I got out was I have a girlfriend.
Burst
into tears. I just started crying and bless everyone's heart. They all came and hugged me.
Of course.
All 20 people, they're all crying with me. They're saying, we love you. We accept you. It was a beautiful moment. It's a great way to come out to a lot of people.
Oh, seriously. Yeah.
But that was, I mean, to talk about the bookends of that experience, the beginning of it was loving others easy when I love and accept myself. And I needed to have the choice to say, I need to take a risk because I am dying inside. If I'm not allowing myself to be whole. Yeah. With who I am.
Right.
And that cracked things open even more for myself and all of those relationships in my life, right? To say, like, I can be myself
and be whole.
And be whole.
Right. And so I would imagine that withholding such an enormous part of who you are is hugely difficult. I wonder also if there are some parallels, even if it may not be something that is even quite that large. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you might be a person who has a lot of debt, or a person who, or any kind of grapefruit that you're yep. hiding. And again, not to minimize your story at all, yeah. but I'm just for the listeners to realize that this is not necessarily about coming out, but mm-hmm. it's about being in integrity and being whole and loving the wholeness of you.
Yep.
Things that are not broken, but they may be things you still have been trained to hold shame around.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. I don't take it as this is the invitation. The invitation is, and this relates to Brené Brown's work, I think, because mm-hmm. her work on shame and vulnerability yeah. is so important for this conversation. Because as we think about, you know, I was lucky. I really, mm-hmm. that I came out to these friends and colleagues and they were very supportive. I have had experiences that did not go well, that were very yeah. negative about people's response. However, when we choose to be vulnerable, we ask ourselves, who might I be mm-hmm. able to share this with? Who might be able to hold this with me? Mm-hmm. And to be willing to take a risk with someone who is a friend, maybe it's somebody who's a teacher, mm-hmm. maybe it's somebody you work with, right? But like you said, it could be having debt, it could be fertility, yeah. having challenges with fertility, it could be health related, it could be mm-hmm. something I did in my past that I'm having trouble forgiving myself for, reconciling.
Right.
There's lots of things that we carry shame. And mm-hmm. as Brené Brown says, it survives when we don't talk about it and don't share yes. it, and it grows. And so that journey is an important one for us to hold and acknowledge our own shame
yep.
and to find ways that we right. can talk about it.
And I think that's why she has her work on vulnerability, really reframing that as not from one of a sign of weakness, but in fact, it is a superpower.
Yep.
And it's, I think, probably at the root of what you and I have been talking about a little bit right here, that we understand when we have those vulnerable moments, we are witnessing and being a part of someone's strength. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are in that delicious juiciness of that it may feel untethered.
Yep.
But in fact, it is really that an expression of your power and your superpower. And it's where the real growth lies. I just see this real fertile, mossy, yummy, tear-filled. Some of my snottiest tear-filled moments are the yeah. moments that I've changed the most.
Yes.
And they often came about by something that I was holding in that I felt bad about. Can y'all hear the dog in the background? He's decided to clear
his
throat.
He's joining. He's moving some energy. He's And thank goodness for our pets and our animals. You know, long before Absolutely. I could share with human beings some of
you
my story, I talked
to
my dogs. I would talk to my dogs. I was a teenager. I would share.
They knew all about you.
Oh my goodness, they knew everything. But and in this, I think for us to talk about not only the person who's sharing, but also the person who's receiving, and how important it is for us to do our own work so that we can hold and we mm-hmm. can just, that's something that I just love, because, you know, I am someone who, I don't feel judgment towards people. It's very rare. Mm-hmm. So people mm-hmm. will come to me and say, I've never told this to anyone, or I wanted to share this with you. And it's such an honor to be able to say, oh, you know, thank you for sharing this with me. And you are lovable and amazing. Mm-hmm. And this is a part of your experience, and it doesn't define you. And
yeah.
allowing that to be part of just the experience that you've had is doesn't take anything away from your value, your worthiness,
no.
your amazingness. So yeah, so for us to really practice being the listener too, and to hold
yeah.
that is so, like you said, sacred.
It is sacred. It is sacred. And I, you are amazing at that. You're a gift. You model that for others. Mm-hmm. Again, we don't come in necessarily come into the life, you know, being able to sit in somebody's discomfort, and we've learned some of our judgments, but we can develop that, right? And mm-hmm. so you really, thank you for modeling that. Thank yeah. you. I have a couple of questions here that I kind of ask everybody at the end.
Great.
Okay. So when you just mentioned a minute ago, when I'm not flossing my teeth every day, I notice that I'm off track a little.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you get back on track? And whatever on track means to you, but mm-hmm. how do you, what do you do?
Well, you know, at times when I feel, well, sometimes I feel like I can say, oh, let me just take a quick inventory of the things that I do that help me feel centered, whole. And I ask myself, am I meditating? Mm. Am I doing yoga? Mm-hmm. When's the last time I wrote in my journal?
Yeah.
Those are some of the main things that I yep. will check in with myself on. And recently, maybe it was a few weeks ago, I realized that I had hit a point in my self-care kind of regimen or resilience that where I dipped below a layer that I hadn't dipped below in a long mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. And that was a layer that was, I wasn't meditating, I wasn't doing yoga, I wasn't writing in my journal, and I wasn't feeling like it. It wasn't uh-huh. like I could say, oh, I'm noticing I didn't do these things that are helpful for me. I will do that. Right. And so I want to acknowledge that we hit those points too. So what I have done and what I did recently was just say, oh, you know, I must be really hurting. Just a simple saying, oh, I must be really hurting, or I must be really struggling to feel mm-hmm. like I know these things are helpful for me and I don't feel like I still can don't do them. And so what gosh. I did was I'm researching to find a specific type of therapist that I feel I need. I want to work with a therapist that does internal family systems therapy, but also works with patients with trauma and CPTSD. So gotcha. That's a very specific thing. But for me to say, I need help.
Yeah.
I need a
yeah.
type of help that I haven't gotten before, but now I'm ready for. So those are a couple right. of things that I've beautiful. Done recently.
So you kind of have you have some acknowledgement about when you're shooting on all cylinders, mm-hmm. these are the kind of things I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Then there's the noticing if you're not doing it. And then I love that you even differentiated and you went back to a question. You went back to that loving, compassionate question. I love that. Betsy, if you put your motto on a bumper sticker that you'd want to advertise on, you know, your motto for folks, what would it be? Nothing like
sizzle.
Putting on the spot. Sorry.
I know. I I'm an improviser, so I ought to be
able
to do
that.
That's
true. You
go. I just put sizzle. Uh-huh. I'll give the quick background, which is one of my nicknames that I was given 16 years ago by a friend of mine. But what I have, it's also my business, Sizzle Consulting LLC. What I feel sizzle is that's very specific part of you that when you come into alignment comes alive. And is able to be in joy and be playful and express yourself creatively and serve your purpose. And so I think it would need more than one word to give some sure. of the background, but that's the
you
word
can
that
put
comes.
A saying.
Sizzle and thrive or something like that. Or sizzle. or it could be something like a slogan on a bumper sticker was, you're lovable.
You're lovable. I love
you're
that.
Lovable. Every single yeah. person is worthy of love.
Mm, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Who are your go-tos when you mentors, books, who are like, you know, the people you go to when you need a loving metaphorical kick in the ass? Like who?
Abraham
you,
Hicks.
Abraham Hicks.
That's
yeah.
a lot of them.
Yeah.
Brené
Get
Brown.
Back to Brené.
Mm-hmm. Byron Katie.
Yeah. The work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those are
your go-tos.
Pema Chodron.
Yeah.
Tara Brock. This.
Yeah. Our bookshelves are very similar. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I love when I am, you can't see the picture, but my books, I feel like that I have this wall of wisdom. Mm. You know, I don't even have to read the books. I don't know about you, but it's just the titles.
Oh, with sometimes. A bookshelf like that, you just have to walk up to it and walk along it. I really do think that a great bookshelf like that that you've curated gives a little hug to you.
It does.
You're just right by there. I have a friend who has an incredibly curated library at her house. It's basically a two-car garage that she's converted to a library. And I just walk in there and just stand by the books and I feel better.
You just feel it, don't you?
Yeah.
I love it. So. I do. Okay, my last question is, if given a choice, is it dark chocolate or milk chocolate?
Oh my gosh. Dark chocolate or milk chocolate? I can't believe it. Oh, you really.
What's your
answer? My whole life was milk chocolate up until the last maybe 10 years of dark chocolate. Gotcha. But I guess okay if I have to pick now, I'd say dark chocolate. But now my palms are sweaty. I'm like, I think it's both. You really baked my noodle on that one, Sherry.
You do not have to choose. I will never make you choose. Yeah. You can have both. But dark is the right answer. I'm just saying. Oh, gosh. You guys, I hope that my heart is full. I feel like I've been so blessed, Betsy, from the sharing. I've learned more about your story. You've gone deeper. I have been touched. My notes just for me right here are amazing. And I'm trusting that those who are listening to this have been touched. If you've been pinged in any way by what you've heard from Betsy or our conversation today, please don't ignore that. Pay attention to that. Write it down. Carve out some time to just explore the ping. Okay, just trust that and know that there was some divine timing involved, that you might be listening to Betsy's story for a reason. And then I want you to take a look in the show notes. I'm going to give you all the ways to reach out to Betsy, to follow her, to connect with her on LinkedIn and on the web and all those things. And, you know, it's a small world. We really can connect. You can pick up the phone and in a matter of days be having a conversation with Betsy or me or whatever. That's the way the world is. And mm-hmm. So I'm going to encourage you to do that if it's hit you that way. And, Betsy, thank you.
Oh my
you
goodness,
have any,
Sherry.
Any final thing to say?
I do. I really thank you for your leadership and your wisdom and for all the ways that you've listened to your heart and followed your path, because these are doors, all the doors that you've opened. It just brings people together. And so when our conversations, I always learn something. I always leave inspired. And I also really appreciate the laughter. And I would be remiss if I didn't say to everyone, follow the sparks of joy.
Yeah.
Those are clues in your life. Clues. And you don't have to figure out the next 100 steps. But every time there's a little bit of playfulness or a little bit of joy or a little bit of laughter, that's a wink to say.
That's a wink. I love it.
Take the next step, because that is your birthright. Your birthright is to be part of the whole and to be someone that's playful and joyful.
Yes.
And sometimes we get so far from that, we don't think that's us. I'm here to remind you, it is part of who you are. And remembering that, I think, is one of the portals to our freedom.
Gosh, I love that you ended with that. Thank you. The universe is flirting with us.
Yep.
And let's flirt. Let's go do it.
Let's do it.
Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you
so much. Thank you so much for listening to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast, and I sure hope that you're taking away something that you can begin to use today. Speaking of things you can use, I have lots of free things over at sherryhoneycutt.com, and the one I want to highlight in today's podcast is something I call Work Your Butt Off, and I spell it B-U-T. Let's get those butts worked off, and it is a 30-day program to help you get your butts off the couch. It's 30 videos, it's a 75-page workbook, I think, and it's free to help you begin to take deliberate action toward getting that thing or those things done. So that's what I've got for you. I would love to invite you over to sherryhoneycutt.com. Click under cool stuff and you'll find that. You'll also find the link in the show notes and in the description of this podcast. Y'all, I'm here to help you take action, because action is how we begin to get new thoughts around our life. So go check it out. Get your free copy of this course that I've designed, and go and design your best life. Until next time.